Greetings, I am Jim.
And I am Sean, and we welcome you to our podcast.
Our goal is to entertain you with our discussions about RPG, fantasy, and everything in between.
Come sit by the fire. You're safe here. We'll keep watch. We hope you enjoy 13-Sided Die. Level 4, Episode 30. The Busy Summer. Listen to what Sean and Jim got up to. Wow, so much accomplished with two new books underway.
Amazing.
Come hear about our friend's new comic book, Tales from the Void. All this and more in our latest episode of 13-Sided Die. Well, welcome. You may remember us. It is Sean here from Ardnor Minis with my good friend.
I believe Epic Jim is what they used to call me.
I remember that now. I do remember that.
Yeah, it's been a while, but
we've been a little vacant. It has been summertime, though. So, you know, summertime in Canada, like you always say, Jim, you got to enjoy it when you can, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe. Hopefully no one's binging our podcast right now, because like three podcasts ago, we were like, yeah, we're like nailing it. We're doing it every 2 weeks this year. And that was, you know, like 8 months ago. So,
yeah, we've not been very regular, have we? That's okay. But we've been very busy and we're very excited to talk about that busy. But before we do that, I believe this is a level up episode. This is episode number 30, right?
Woo! Yeah, buddy.
Woo! That's exciting. So Jim was tasked with remembering what we do when we level up, because I couldn't remember. And what is our plan, Jim? How do we level up?
Should have just texted Chris, is what I should have done. Old crew.
Chris would have known.
Yeah. So at ArtCon last time for our level up, we did for the first year ArtCon, rolled a D12 because we don't have a D13.
Right.
So we rolled D12 for hit points and then add one.
Okay, cool.
Oh, I got one here.
Go for it.
Oh, 9 plus 1, ooh, so 10 more hit points. And we got 4 at the first ArtCon, so.
Okay, and do you remember how many we had at the beginning?
No idea.
Which? So we probably had about maybe a 6 or a 7. So we were probably like at about 21 hit points or something.
Yeah, you know, we're not too squishy.
No, maybe what we'll do is we'll ask Chris Loremaster to tell us how many hit points we had going into this. And then next episode, we'll know how many we've got in total.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Cool.
Thanks, Chris. Awesome. And then what is the other thing we normally do?
Oh, and we rolled for a skill. If you want, do you got any dice on you? Oh, of course.
The old dice bag. What am I getting?
D100.
D100. I can do that. 44.
You can cast Levitate on yourself.
Ooh, that's sick.
So, I mean, you know, once the angry mob comes to give a shit for not recording very often, we can just cast Levitate. And
perfect timing.
Yeah.
Good call. That was awesome.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks everyone for sticking it out with us.
Yeah. Sorry. We've been vacant, but we're now leveled up. So that's good. I believe last episode, when we last left off, our adventurers were traversing the wilds and our good friend and lore master Chris was with us. We had the three of us, which was very exciting.
In the Fungeon. Yeah.
In live. Like, that was kind of cool. I know the audio didn't sound as good. I was listening to it. It didn't quite have the same tone because we were just using one microphone. But it was really cool to have all of us together in one room. I did really enjoy that. That was a lot of fun. But as we do with a guest, we ask the guest to come up with the topic for our next show. And Chris did. And do you have that topic available there, Jim?
Yeah, it was best resources for thinking through fancy ideas.
Very cool.
Example was like Chris said how he loves looking at like the old DM's guide, like the art and stuff. And that just fires the old imagination up.
Yeah, 100%. And we've said this many times on the, you know, on our previous podcasts and stuff, like draw on those old, you know, manuals, modules.
Don't ever draw on your old manuals.
Don't draw on them. Sorry. Yes. Be inspired by the old manuals and modules. Because it's just a wealth of knowledge, you know. And for my Patreons one time. I went through and I'd found a number of resources where all the old manuals and all the old game modules were available in PDF format. I think some of the places they're coming from were a little dubious and it wasn't quite legal, one might say. But hell, these things were printed, you know, 20, 30 years or more ago. I don't think it's a big deal. But you can pull up an old module from something and you don't have to use the module per se, but go through it and pull elements of it out. Use the basic, you know, scenario, right? And use that to inspire you.
Even like one item or one building or one NPC.
Yeah. Or the whole friggin' thing. Like, if that's what you want to do, like, you know, you use the module if you want. Just upgrade it to whatever version you're playing. Or take the idea from it of what they're doing in the module and use that into your own homebrew. Like, it's just a wealth of knowledge there. Like, don't, you know, don't be stressed about it.
Yeah. I find, too, like, old, like, fantasy novels.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Dragonlance and the Dritz novels in particular for when I'm thinking like D&D campaigns.
That's great stuff. I want to say, and it's a thank you to you, buddy, because you got these for me. It's those story dice. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Yep. Those things are great. And like, you know, what I've been finding is that I think that's how you kind of had mentioned to them about using them. But when I go into a game with my players and they're traveling somewhere, I'll get them, you know, I'll hand out three or four of those dice and get them to roll them. And that's what happens on the way. So we, you know, one of the games we played, they had a cart, a mirror, and a bird cage, I think, or a cage had come up. And so I said, okay, tell me what happens. And they're kind of like, what? I'm like, yeah, just tell me what's going on. And so they came up with a story that they were heading across the field and all of a sudden one of them saw something flashing on the distance. And then they realized somebody was like kind of looked like somebody was maybe trying to signal them or something. And so that was the mirror. And to get closer, mm-hmm. and it's a cart, and there's somebody in the cage on the cart, and they've got a little mirror, and they're trying to hit the sun and reflect it. And that's what brought the party over. And then through some, I'm like, cool. So then I start riffing on that. And it's okay. I've decided that the people driving the cart are bad. They've captured this person. And so the party has to figure that out, which they do through some conversation. And they wind up scaring the guys off. They run off. And they released the person from the cage. He was I can't remember what we told, I think it might have been a person who made instruments or something, and told him to come by and see them sometime. So they made kind of like an ally. And he gives them they gave them the cart and told him to head back to town, asked if he needed escort. He said no, he was fine. And perfect. Like, it was so fun. And it was a great way to come up with something without having to, you know, I didn't have to sit a couple of days before and figure out what is going to happen on this thing or, you know, or do a roll chart at the time, which is fine, but it was more fun for the players to actually roll the dice themselves and do it. So that neat little story dice, Jim had sent them to me. I know you use them. Super highly recommend them. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, I wonder how come they work so well. Like, I wonder if it's like, it like taps into the players' like subconscious of like what they want to be doing in the adventure or something. Like, I know everyone just loves them though.
They do, right? They got, and I think it's also like the fate being in their hands, like them getting to roll the dice. And then they looked at the little pictogram and decide, oh, it's a mirror. What? And then right away, one of them's like, someone's signaling us. And it's like, that's so cool.
Yeah. And if they pick treasure on that, make sure it's always cursed. And then they'll knock that shit off real quick.
That's a good call.
Because I've had players do that too.
Yeah.
Every time. Oh, we found a big chest, I guess, under this hill. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Big chest, yeah. Big mimic.
Yeah, big chest with big teeth.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, you know, and of course, like we always say too, like movies is a great place to get inspiration from it being either a character, a location, hell, even the theme, like the you know, what is the story about? Think about, you know, a movie you've enjoyed the tale of and kind of rewrite it in your own version for your players. Like, it's, everything's been done. Like, I'm sure the movie got their storyline from a book or from something from previous as well. Like, everything's, mm-hmm. you know, just rewrite it, redo it. It's interesting. Stuff can come from anywhere. Like, when I was did a lot of visual arts and I had a client would want something, I would often say to them, like, just if there's something you've seen you like the look of, bring that along and show it to me. Hell, it can be a cereal box. You like the look of the cereal box. That's what we'll use as inspiration to do what we're doing. So it can come literally from anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
I would recommend visiting historic sites. In North America, we don't have quite as many that date back as far as, you know, kind of the idea of the medieval fantasy that we play in our role-playing games. But anything like that, museums, I know we used to go down to the Glenbow Museum here in Calgary, and up on the third floor, there was an armory, and you could go through and you could look at, you know, armor, swords. Looking at a great sword, when you actually realize how freaking big they are, like they're so long, and you think about people wielding those in hallways, it's just hilarious. You know, there's no way you could swing that thing without hitting the walls. That's yes. A place for inspiration, right?
Seeing the skeletons of the old archers and the side that they like pulled the drawstring back was just huge. Like their muscles were like way bigger than their bones on that one side. Like those guys must have been monsters.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah. I was going to say too, if you guys have Instagram, Immersive Dungeon Delving is his handle.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Josh. He's awesome. He's always posting old school fantasy stuff. His collection is unmatched. I've never seen anyone with a better old school D&D collection. And he lives like in the UK and he visits like catacombs and real castles and stuff all the time and old graveyards, and like his page is just a wealth of information for that kind of stuff, for inspiration.
That is cool. Very cool. I was originally born in England, but we moved back when I was 13, 14 for a year. And I tell you, man, I loved it. Like there was, if you go to Europe, if you pick up a rock and throw it, you're going to hit something really cool. Like that's just the way it works. That's kind of been my standing joke. Like everywhere you go, there's some cool building or cool something. And, you know, like I said, like the churches and the graveyards are insane. It's not as much fun here. But saying that, and we'll talk about some of this more in a second part of the podcast, when we did that visit up at Jim's neck of the woods up in Hinton, you took us to that graveyard in Brule.
Yeah.
And through this really cool old abandoned remains of the town. And I mean, that is so inspiring, seeing these trees growing out of these old stone stairs, you know, like that looks really cool. And then the cemetery.
At the base of a mountain.
Like, You can't not walk through there and be inspired by stuff like that. So, you know, and pretty much every fantasy story has people in forests. So get out in the woods, walk around a forest and get inspired by what's going on in the forest, the feel for it. The more description you can put into your narrative, the better, right? So if you're walking around a forest, think about what it feels like, the air, what it feels like, you know, the smells, the sounds, all that stuff, and work that into your storytelling. I was on a hike with my son, Connor, and we were up in the mountains just to the west of us here. And there's an old area that's been dug out into the mountain. And they call it the Diefenbunker because it was supposed to be a Diefenbaker at that time. And they were going to make a bunker to store stuff or something as part of the story. I don't totally know if I got it right or not. But we found it, and it's this huge, like 10, 15 foot high kind of dugout tunnel that goes back into the mountain, and you can walk into it for quite a ways. I tell you, it got dark as frick fast, like really quickly. It was black, and not the kind of dark like, you know, you go to bed at night. It's the dark that you hold your hand in front of your face an inch away and you don't see anything, nothing. And within about, I'd say 10, 15 feet into that, you know, cave, it got cold fast. It was like a hot summer day, and then it was like cold. And it was just shocking how quickly things changed. That was an experience, you know, that you could use to write about and use in a game.
Yeah. Oh, man, that just gave me a really good idea for campaigns. Okay, so hear me out. Dwarves are like, they like think the cataclysm's coming, and they're making like a giant like time capsule, like a bunker, and they're just like,
they're going
to go as deep as they can and put everything down at the very bottom and just seal it up because they don't think anything else is going to survive.
That's crazy. Do they go too deep?
You'll have to play and see.
That'd be kind of cool. And then they're gathering stuff. You could have like the diggers building and then troops going out and gathering stuff to bring into it. So they could be almost like a raiding party in a sense, gathering things.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just that, right? Like a bunker. Put that in a D&D game.
Yeah, I think it's just being creative, right? Just thinking about things a little differently.
I was going to say it because I took you guys to some pretty sweet waterfalls when you were up too.
We did.
And I remember me and Old Crow when we were looking at like the logs that were leaning across there, and we were just trying to guess the DC on that.
Yeah.
Like even that for inspiration, be like, oh, right there, I'll just take that as a encounter. Like, totally. That's going to be so hard. That's a wet log over top of a waterfall.
Yeah. With like mist coming at you from the waterfall, the noise.
Yeah.
I what inspired me there too was that you saw where the water had been, and we walked through a bunch of those areas. The water had like eroded the rock in these really cool organic curved channels. Well, you could make almost like a labyrinth of these where it was an old waterway that does, that is, you know, it's gone, and all these paths, and you can make them kind of be linked and connected. So it's almost like a labyrinth of tunnels that are worn away from the water, which would be really cool. And then you put like a booby trap in where somebody does something and all of a sudden it opens something up and it starts gushing water through it, you know, like, and that's just because we saw this really cool ecological area you took us to, and we got to see stuff like that and, you know, write that into a story.
And think how cool it would look if you got like water elementals to do it.
Right.
With purpose, where you can make secret tunnels and
crazy, crazy. So fun. I don't want to sound rude, but a lot of times I hear people like, you know, I don't know what to do, or I can't think of something. And I find I can't stop thinking of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I think part of it is just take a breath and just don't think so hard and just have fun. You know what I mean? Because it's all just there. And if you're coming from a DM perspective, which I think a lot of times our conversations here are that way, they're kind of more from a DM perspective. But think about what would be fun to run. Because, you know, you're not there just to create an environment for players to enjoy themselves. That's the goal. But you also want it to be that you enjoy it too. So what is fun to you? You know, is the occult cool? Make it about some really cool, you know, kind of a dark, twisted, occult, mystical stuff going on, right? Like kind of a, you know, Cthulhu, voodoo, whatever, like something like that. If that's what you're into, do that. Maybe you're really into vampires. Cool. Make a cool vampire story. Like, make it something that you, because if you're interested in it, you're going to put way more energy into it. If you're not into zombies, don't do zombies, right? Because you're just going to feel bored. Yeah. So go after a passion.
And the more you're into it, the easier it's going to be to improvise too, right?
Right? 100%.
Because your brain's firing hard. Yeah, same. If you don't like zombies and you're trying to improvise that, you're like, yeah, I don't know. They're wandering around and moaning. Yeah, I don't know. There's a field of them.
Yeah, go kill them.
Yeah.
And what is the one we always talk about? The lazy DM's guide to something? What's it called, Jim?
The lazy DM. Just the lazy dungeon master.
Yeah, that's a great book. If you need something quick and fast, I find those kind of books really good, right? Like,
he cut down my like DM prep by like 75%. It was like, quit. Yeah. Like, what are you doing wasting all this time on this little crap? Like, get the main stuff and then the rest of it will just fall into place and your players are going to mess around anyways. So
totally. I think when I, it's kind of been the two big campaigns in the last 10 years and the, one we're in now, and the previous one, I had this epic tale and it's beautiful. Like it is like a story. It is so great. It is so sweeping. We played it for like 4 or 5 years or so, maybe 6 years. Absolutely loved it. It was great. But I really felt very hammed in on it because anytime I just felt I didn't have a liberty to improvise because I was so worried I would say something that felt I was going off script and that would become part of that mythos of this world and the story that was created. And I kind of had railroaded myself into following a path in a way. Do you know what I mean? And so it became very hard to riff on things. So I had to have all my games very planned out and very organized. And the players loved it. I mean, they still had agency, but not the level of agency that you would have, you know, kind of in a game described now. But I wanted to keep it so that they could do stuff, but there certainly was a direction we're going. And so everything became very important as to what I said. And I felt very worried I was going to say the wrong thing, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So when we got around to the campaign we're in now, I've tried to keep it way more open where I have some general ideas and some thoughts of where it might go, but letting it get there is what gets there. I mean, like Jim, you're a member of that campaign now because I had written down a silly little thing, and I think for me this is a tip that I read somewhere and I use it all the time. When every tavern that the players go into, I have a couple of things written down on the side that I use if they're going to a tavern. It's like the drink of the night or the drink of the day, right? The special. I have three or four things they might be able to perceive of what's going on. And it can literally be like, you know, one or two lines. And, you know, example in my other campaign that I run, I had written down that you overhear some people talking a little too loudly, and maybe because they've drank a little too much, but they seem to be bragging about a caravan they just plundered and talking about their spoils. So my players in that game didn't like that at all. They took offense to that because they're starting to warm up to this town. So they wound up going over, one of them befriending them and getting him more drinks, getting him more drunk, found out more information about what went on, and eventually got the town guards to go and, you know, knock out them at night in their room. They found out what room they're staying in. It was it's interesting. And that was just a little snippet I'd written down. The players might have not bid on it, might not want to do anything, but having those little things written down, like the drink of the night, have fun with it, a couple of things they might overhear. And one of them that I had was a group of people came in with looked like a statue of a person. And when you look a little closer, it looked like the person's kind of like freaked out a little bit, put their hands up like they're trying to protect themselves. And then they realized that it was somebody who's turned to stone from a basilisk. They got very concerned about this person. They bought the statue from the people, eventually turned the person back from stone to flesh. The guy's name was Jim. And that's actually how Jim came into our game. He now plays that character. And that was all from a one line that I had written down about visiting a tavern, and some guys drag in what looks to be a statue and they're trying to sell it. It turned into a whole character who's been playing with us now for like 2 years in the game. It's because I'm allowing myself to run with it, so much more can happen, you know, like, and I find for me, that's become a very important thing. Like you're saying, Jim, about not over preparing for the game, one or two little notes about something that allow me to riff on it and have fun. I guess that goes back to those story dice. Like we said, it's the same idea. Three little pictures described a whole event that we played through for about half an hour, had fun playing through. I didn't have to write anything. Those were literally rolled up on the spot.
Yeah. That's when your players like can't do that. I don't know. It really just blocks you too. And just, I find you don't do the yes and, right? You're like, no, you guys are supposed to be going this way. You're supposed to be going this way.
Right.
Just let the players have fun and do what they want and then riff off that. It's way easier. And then everyone has more fun too.
Oh yeah. And if there's something that you feel has to happen, you know, like it's a storyline that you really want to take them towards because you've got something planned or whatever. Maybe you've built a cool piece of terrain or whatever. Like a lot of people, I've had people who say like, it doesn't have to be behind this door that you originally had it planned. It can be behind another door later on in the game. Like, you know what I mean? Like, no one knows. It's up to you where you place the hook or what happens. Like, it doesn't matter. If they go left when you really kind of need them to go right, well, what was on the right-hand side, put it on the left-hand side. Or they get to it at a little later point. Like, it doesn't have to affect the game. It's also, it can be also fluid. And that's really all that matters.
And I can't remember. Did your players name the statue Jim, or did the person in the tavern call the statue Jim?
I'm pretty sure the players named him Jim, which was really funny. It might have been me. I can't totally remember. Like, no, you know, actually, I think they probably did that. They probably asked, because I think they wound up being able to communicate with it. That's what happened, because someone could communicate with something through some ways, like whatever it was. And they communicated with the person and they said, you know, what their name was. And the first name popped in my head was Jim.
Yeah.
And then it was funny because then it was a couple of weeks or a month later, I asked, would you be interested in playing this character for a little bit? And it was just perfectly fitted. So, but yeah, you know, I mean, an inspiration should come literally from anything and anywhere, you know, and if you can be fluid and move with stuff and let stuff happen, you can have some really amazing things. I've often said too, like I can sit and write a campaign and very similar to the previous one where I had it very plotted out, and that's cool. But that's one person's kind of plan. And if you can have a game where you're letting everyone contribute, now all of a sudden you have a bunch of minds thinking and creating and working off each other. And it's going to be amazing because just all that contribution, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like letting your, if you're doing homebrew, let your players create like the towns that their play or their characters from.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to do any of that work.
Right.
They design the town or their village or whatever, And then you can just riff off that and it's super easy.
Totally.
If and you want to hurt them, burn it down.
How many times do you have a character that's playing in the game, one of your players, and they meet someone or they've seen something, they've seen a strange marking on the wall and they go like, have I seen this before? Have I met this person before? And you say, okay, give me, if it's, have I seen it? Give me a history roll. They give roll and you know, they get a 17. Cool. I think a good DM at that moment in time says, okay, tell me about it. And let the player tell you about the symbol that they saw. Because they rolled a 17. They knew what it was. It's from their history. Now all of a sudden the player's gonna be like, okay, it's a, and then you let them kind of riff on it. And then all of a sudden a whole different storyline has just evolved because it's not something you've created. They're going to say, oh, okay, well, yeah, it's this, you know, it's this depiction of a raven with circles around it. And there's markings in the circles. And the raven was the symbol of, you know, the Oathbreaker. You know, they make something up. And all of a sudden you go like, oh shit. Yeah. The Oathbreaker. And then you get excited and you start thinking up stuff. And all of a sudden, boom, you're off and running because someone's inspired you. A lot of times as a DM, we go, they'll say like, have I seen the symbol before? You'll go, make a roll, make a history roll, 17. You go, yes, you have. And it is a, and as a DM, you start telling them about it.
Yeah.
Let them tell you. If it's somebody they've met. Yeah. It's, you know, it's, you know, Wilson the Bold. Yeah. You met Wilson before. Tell us a bit about Wilson, what you remember. Yeah. And so they make the shit up on the spot themselves, make them be the DM. And all of a sudden it's a different story being told. And your players generally are pretty jazzed because they got to tell the story. Like they got to contribute to it directly as opposed to being told to them, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if they just need like a little direction, right? You could say, oh, the symbol's actually from like a cult.
Yeah.
If they know, be like, it's a cult that you've recognized from your hometown.
Yeah.
What's the cult like? And then
yes. You can
add that. Even if the cults are different, you go, oh, well, they had a mashup sometime or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And just engages the player, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope I try and do that enough. Like, I think that's a really great thing to do, to let the players have that level of creativity and feel like they're really engaged in the game.
Yeah, just inspiration from everywhere and anywhere, honestly.
Honestly. And I try and think of it sometimes like when, you know, when I'm a player, and I think we might have talked about this before, but we were playing a game with our good friend Russ. He was DMing it. And he had a couple of players that are running characters. They had never really played D&D before, so it was all new to them. And so Russ had said, yeah, there's this going on. And it worked out that there was somebody coming to the small shed and we needed to get information to them. Or I can't even totally remember what it was. And we wanted to try and engage with them. And that was kind of towards the end of the game. So the next game we came, well, I wrote at home, wrote out a note, made up a little easy to do code that I put on the note, folded it all up, put a little seal on it for a giggle. And then I went to the game as a player. And then we're talking and we're saying, what should we do? I said, I'll tell you what, I've seen this work before. How about I go sneak in there? I put in a note and blah, 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 and explained what was going on. And they're like, oh, that's a cool idea. I said, okay. So then I reach over to Russ. I said, here's the note. And so I give a prop to the DM and the rest of the players look at me like, what? Mm-hmm. And you can see someone going like, you can do that? And Russ, being a good DM, is like, cool. And he took it and he ran with it and he used the note and he worked it into it. And it was really fun. And it's like, you can do that. Why couldn't you do that? Right. I'm not spoiling the game or I'm not messing up Russ's plans. I'm, you know, and for me as a DM, it's great. Like you said, Jim, when someone does that, if they make up their hometown, you don't have to do it. Me providing a note with something written on and everything gives Russ something to work from and work with. And if it's too strong and too bold, well, then the DM will just diminish it and not use the whole thing or something, right? Like if it spoils plans, they'll work with it. But for the most part, any DM is going to be like, yeah, thanks, man. That's awesome. That gives me something to work with.
Yeah. Or you'd be, oh, if you didn't like the last half, you'd be like, oh, it's ripped in half and you can't.
Right?
Like whatever. And then be like, you'll have to find the bottom half of it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's there's so much that you can do. And, you know, it's just, I think it's just take a breath and think about it. Don't think too hard. Have fun with it. Be inspired by anything and everything and just go.
Yeah.
What do you think? Did we answer Old Crow's question?
I guess so. That's all he's getting from us, I think.
I find every time we have a question from the previous guests and we talk, I always think, did we even get anywhere close answering what they asked?
Yeah. Like, was that even like what he meant by that?
Sorry, buddy. Oh, well.
They know know what they're getting by this point.
Yeah, that's it. If you're going to sign up, man.
It's, 30 that's episodes, man. You know what you're in for now.
Too late now. Okay, well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a couple seconds. Fantasy Factoid.
Unicorn symbolism. Unicorns, often depicted as horse-like creatures with a single horn, symbolize purity and grace. In medieval Europe, they are believed to have the ability to cleanse water and heal sickness. Woo, unicorns!
Hi, I'm TJ from the Actual Play D&D podcast, AdLib Heroes. If you like adventure, mystery, and magic, join us in the fantastic and intriguing world of Tusi as our characters discover ancient mysteries and personal secrets. Be a part of the adventure with AdLib Heroes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, we are back here. We're going to talk for the second part of the podcast here a little bit about kind of the crazy busy summer that we've had. And I think everybody that I know has just got so much going on. Our good friends, Friendly Mike and Chubbs, our amazing tattoo artists up in Edmonton, they have a project that just launched last week, and it's called Tales from the Void. It's a hand-drawn, hand-created, independent comic, kind of like a neat horror comic that they've been working on. And these poor guys have been plugging away on this thing for almost a year. It's amazing. And they've just had issue one released, which is very, very cool. You can check out their Patreon, their Instagram. You can order the comics off Etsy. It's very exciting, isn't it, Jim?
Oh, man. Just like the detail that's went into all that. And like, that's why it's there's so much love and detail and everything. And like, I was lucky enough to go visit them a couple, a month ago or so. And just seeing it all drawn up. And Mike has a bunch of stuff up in his art room, and it's just so cool. It's so awesome for anyone that loves like fantasy or horror, sci-fi. It's just like that weird mix, kind of. I don't know. I get lots of like Cthulhu vibes from it too, like just this mystery, unknown stuff.
For sure. And what's really cool is that they have an overarching story that they're working with, and they're releasing like 3 or 4 pages every comic, which is cool. So it's like a serial kind of style you keep reading. And then they have one-shot, one-page comics that would be like, you know, nothing to do with the main comic, just a separate comic on the side. Yeah, it's crazy. Tons of neat stuff in it. The artwork is just mind-blowing. It's so good. Mm-hmm. And hats off to these guys. They've worked so hard for this. I'm so happy and so proud of them. And so I said, yeah, if you guys want to check it out, Tales from the Void, we'll have some links here on our podcast page. You can go and have a look. But just go and have a look at this amazing artwork. These guys are such lovable people, and they've worked so hard on this. But that's kind of, I think, the tone for the summer, because we did our ArdCon, which was incredible this year, and everybody worked so hard. We had such a success, and we talked about that in previous episodes. And I think coming off of that, there was just this kind of excitement. And for me, after having that last podcast where we sat around for the second part of it and we were rolling random dice for random charts and all that kind of stuff, we came up with a story about dwarves and elves and the elves sneaking into the dwarven kingdom and etc. I went away from that super inspired. Like, we talked, that'd be a really fun campaign to play. And for myself, I've always wanted to contribute to the world of RPGs in a written format. That's something that I've not done before. And I got inspired to create what used to be called like a choose your own adventure. I call them a this way, that way book, and spent a crazy lot of time writing this adventure based on what we, Jim and Old Crow Chris and I talked about, working that elves and the dwarves into the story. I spent a bunch of time doing a whole bunch of the drawings from it. Friendly Mike, who we just talked about, is helping out and do some of the drawings in that as well. It's probably about 85-90% finished. Still got a few more drawings left. I've had a bunch of play testing done. Our good friend Jim here and a bunch of others did play testing on it. And it's very, very close to hopefully launching in the next month or so, which is super exciting. I feel really, really proud of it. I don't even care what happens to it. I just wanted to do it and have this book in my hands and feel that feeling of like contributing to that world. So it's really exciting. So that's kind of a little bit what's going on with me. It's been crazy, crazy busy. And you, Mr. Epic, have also at the same time, unbeknownst to either to me, and neither of us knew we were doing this, but we were both working on a project, which is really cool. And so maybe tell us a little bit about what you got going on.
Yeah, both the game. I just want to say, yeah, and just like playtesting your game, man, I love all the little Easter eggs you put from like our adventure and stuff. And like, it's so awesome.
Oh, thanks, buddy. And thank you for doing the playtesting.
Oh, of course, yeah, man. My pleasure.
There's been so much effort going to that. I've had a lot of really good people. Our good friend John from Tale of the Manticore, he went and gave it a playtest and kind of a read through and helped out with some of the wording and such. Just a lot of good people have had their eyes on it and working away on it. A lot of love has gone into it. And I'm just super excited. But while that's been going on, you, my friend, were also neck deep in some work. What have you been got going on in the crazy world of Jim?
Yeah, which is like pretty crazy that we both decided to make a game at the same time and didn't tell each other about it.
It was mine was a big surprise because I did it all in the world where Jim lives in Hinton. And so it's called the Dwarven Halls of Hintondale. And so I made everything and all the names in it based around where Jim lives, which was a lot of fun. And it was based on the story that Jim and Chris and myself came up with. So I didn't want to tell you about it because it was going to be a surprise. Like, hey, buddy, here's a thing all about where you kind of, you know, you live. And so it was kind of funny. But I just got the joke was on me because you yourself were working on something.
Yeah. Well, I've been pretty busy this summer. I like to enjoy all the outdoor stuff in the summertime. So just been, holidays, went to lots of museums this year and parks and cabins and disc golf and hiking and all that stuff. But the majority of this game got done like within a week. I got to tweak some stuff. I did play a test run with Mike and Chubbs and my buddy T-Wiz. So that was really cool and like awesome feedback. Like everyone was laughing. We're having a good time and no one's frustrated. And like, I honestly teared up a little bit when we were playing. Like I felt so grateful to have such good friends that would play a game that I created, you know, like it's a real special moment for me to like have the experience. But it's called Travelers and Treasure. It's a kingdom builder game. It's, it has a DNA of like the Quiet Year in it, where it's immersive kingdom builder game that combines like storytelling, imaginative exploration, resource gathering, random encounters, and just kind of keeps it like exciting from start to finish. You just need like a couple D20s and D6s and like pen and paper basically, and a deck of cards.
That's sick.
It's a pretty cool. Yeah. It's tons of roll charts and that kind of thing. So. But I'm excited. My wife, she's not really into RPGs at all. And we did a playtest and our kingdom was cats and dogs, like Khajiit, the cat people from Skyrim.
Sick.
And then we did like werewolves or something for the dog people. And it was just like a dog cat kingdom that we made. And of course the dogs ruled and the cats just, you know, they were treated like, if you ever seen the movie, like District 9, they were all just kind of stuffed into one corner of the kingdom. And every time something bad happened, it happened in the cat part of the kingdom.
Terrible.
We just had a blast doing that, you know? So even awesome. if you don't like fantasy or RPG or something, you can use whatever for it. Right. So, but yeah, I'm having a lot of fun. Just needs a little bit of tweaking and I'm going to be getting some playtest going out here pretty soon and excited about it.
That's awesome, buddy. It's very cool. I know I'm very excited to see it. I've heard some good things about it so far. And it's like I know Mike was saying it's just been a really, really a busy year, like lots of creativity going on.
Yeah. We just came so inspired from ArtCon, like all of us.
I think so. I think that was a big boost of it. I know the trip up to see you really did a lot for me too, because it was just getting away from home for a while, getting out in the wilds a little bit and just hanging out with good people. And it was great. And it's just real excitement. And I don't think I realized how important it meant to me to do this. You know, we both, you know, we love the game. We've been doing it for a long time. And it was just, I don't know. Obviously I've contributed in the sense of like so many people have my pieces on their game table, but I hadn't contributed in this way to something that I love. And I've read so many books and things and everything. It felt really important to do that, to write something that would contribute to that world as well. And that's kind of where that came from. There's this idea, this love of wanting to add something to it. And it was a lot of fun. I can remember in the 80s playing some D&D TSR based modules that were solo play. They were, you played it by yourself. You were like a dwarf or somebody going through somewhere. You rolled for all the monsters, you rolled for your attacks, and you had, you know, you'd be faithful and truthful and honest and see if you could make it through this adventure. And I remember they were a lot of fun. I really enjoyed them. And so I've kind of based it off of that. It's not a D&D world in the sense of I'm not using any of their role stats or anything like that, any of their game mechanics that came up with my own. And I'm just really excited to, you know, get it out there and share it with people and hopefully have a good time. You and I were talking as well. I think it's great. Like you just said, you don't have to even be fantasy with yours. This one, you've never had to play D&D on mine. Like you can just sit down and plunk in and play and go. One person, you can play it as a group and have your friends play all the different, there's four members to the party. And you can have a fifth person playing all the monsters. You could run it as a almost like a game where one person's like a GM and they're reading what's going on in the rooms and stuff. So, yeah, I think it's just really exciting. Just so much stuff going on, and it's going to be cool in the next few months to get all this stuff out there.
Oh, yeah. I think it's really important to say that, too. Just if you have a passion project that you want to do, like it doesn't have to make a bunch of money or doesn't have to turn into a side hustle.
Yep.
If you want to write a fantasy novel, like just a short little, just do it. You can, it's so easy to publish stuff on Amazon now too. Like,
right.
It's all like, we live in a time where you can just literally make your own content and it doesn't have to be the next big thing. It can just be just for you and your friends.
Yeah. I mean, how cool would it be to write like a story and don't be daunted. It doesn't have to be like a 300 page, 400 page novel. You could write a 40 page story, self-publish it, get five copies done and give them out to your closest friends. How cool would that be?
Yeah. Christmas present. How cool would that be? You draw the cover.
Right.
Yeah. And everyone would cherish
totally.
It.
Totally. And you're right, Jim. We're in a time, you know, where we can do that kind of stuff. And I think that was the big thing. It was just really hit me hard how I felt I wanted to contribute something to this. And it's just like I said, like, I mean, I don't think I'm going to make any money for this. I'm sure I'm going to cost me more money to get them printed than it'll be that I could sell them for. But it's just for the fun of doing it, you know, like it's giving back to something that's given me so much. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to have something of my own out there in that world, which was kind of fun. And, you know, the people who play tested so far have really enjoyed it. And that is just really warming to your, you know, to yourself to know that something you've put time and effort into and people have enjoyed it. That's really fun.
Yeah. And then like with, we were talking before, with, was Drive-Thru RPG and DM's Guild. If you make something like that and you put it as a PDF, you put it up there, it is passive income. And then other people get it. Like you might make some money off of it. And that's just all bonus after that.
Completely. Completely. Yeah. The channels that are out there now to distribute this, it's insane. You know, we talked again with Mike originally and they're, you know, they saw their comic as being a physical comic and 100% it should be, but with some conversations with them saying that, you know what, if it is digital, it's a way of getting it out to a bunch of people that may never have seen it. And they in turn might want a physical copy because they've looked at the digital one. You know, it's just an advantage to get it out there and have people looking at stuff. It's and it's so simple to do.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, get the physical copy of that. That's
right.
I signed up for that. That's awesome. Actually put on their Patreon. If you do like a tier, it's cheap too, like very affordable, and you'll get like a custom drawing in each comic.
Right.
Which is like a fantasy comic lover. Yep. Like that is so cool to me to have that in a collection. Be like, these are all custom comics.
Yeah. And they've put out the request. If you want to write, if you have a story or something that you want to draw and submit to them as well, let them know and they'll publish it in their comic for you. Like, I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it's just neat to see this amount of stuff going on. And I think you're right, Jim. I think we got so energized with ArdCon and what it has become and just the, you know, how exciting it is. And to be part of it, I think everyone's just kind of taken a lot of inspiration from that and just ran with it.
Well, yeah. And we kind of realize it's like ArdCon, it worked. It's like, we wanted to do it. We did it. It worked. It's like, why don't we do that with more stuff? Okay, I want to make a game. Just do it.
Just do it. I think the trick to it is you just have to be careful and understand that it doesn't have to happen immediately. You know what I mean? Like, you've got other things. We all have other things going on in our lives and stuff. So you just work on it when you can and just kind of keep it going and just plug away at it. And eventually you'll get to a point of having, you know, something there that you can work with. Yeah, it's exciting. And like everything, it takes on a life of its own. Like from where I started to where I am now, it's come so far in so many things and stuff that's changed along the way. And you start sharing it with people and getting their feedback and changes come from that and just makes it better and better. Yeah, it's really cool. It's I'm very excited to get this thing finished and getting it out in the wild and just seeing where it goes from there.
Oh, me too, man. Yeah, I was just looking at my notes here under my Travelers and Treasure. Last time I touched this note was in July, and, you know, like I was hammering on it for weeks and then it was summertime. Yeah. So I put it on the back burner and that's fine. It's not, you know, this isn't going to be my main source of income, or I don't, you know, Sean's not going to, you know, fine me if I don't get it out under his publishing company in the next couple months here. So
you're your own boss, dude.
Yeah. So
that's the thing. If you're doing something like this, you set the tone, you set the pace, and don't be hard on yourself if you don't have time to work on it, but just, you know, try and work on it when you can and plug away. And, you know, it's like you said, Jim, it doesn't cost a lot of money. I mean, even if you don't do publishing, if you only did it as a PDF and put that out there as a PDF, that's totally cool. Mm-hmm. And that's not hard to do. So, you know, a lot of people I know that I speak to, they look at a lot of the stuff that I build, and you know, I'm constantly making stuff. I'm very fortunate. This is my full-time gig. Foolish people pay me money to make them train. You just have to start. And I find a lot of times when I talk to people, they're like, you know, I'm trying to do this, I'm thinking about this. It's like, don't think, just do. Just do. And even if it's wrong, do it for a while and then stop it and do it again and make it right. Like, you just got to dive in, because nothing starts unless you start it. You know, mm-hmm. If you're just thinking about it, you won't get anywhere.
No. And then even like, I have ideas for books, like actual like novels, short stories, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
I have no idea when I'm ever going to get to that, or if I even will, but I have notes, and every time I have good ideas, I write it down, and who knows, it might be in my retirement. I might be like, oh, you know what? I actually have time to sit down and hack this out now.
But you nailed it right there, Jim. Like you said, I write it down. Is if you try and leave it in the brain and remember, we stuff so much crap in our heads, and we're not going to remember stuff, but that's the trick of just getting it down, writing it down. And, you know, sometimes I know as a creative person, I get the idea that I want to, for something, I'm very excited to do it, but I know I don't have the time or I don't have the resources right now. So a lot of times I do what I call a sketch. It can be like literally a drawing, but it can be like some talking about it. It can be thinking about the hardest part of it and trying to make something that would be like that, just to see if I can do that hard part. And all those components will add up to the final thing at some point, but I don't have to do it right now. No. And it's just dealing with it and getting it down somewhere so that when you do want to go do it, you've got the preparation work there. You know what I mean? Like you can refer to your notes or look at this thing you made before. And, but yeah, I mean, I'm super blessed right now. I mean, I've got a lot of stuff in the workshop on the go. One of my clients was is a major World of Warcraft player. They were injured at one point in time and were laid up in bed for a really long time. And they were playing that was kind of what helped them get through recovery. And they got very, very good. Like they were ranked very high in the worldwide rankings and big lover of the game. I'll confess I've never played it. I'm not a World of Warcraft guy. And probably just because I'm more scared about falling down a rabbit hole, never coming back out again. but there's an area in the game called the Scarlet Monastery, which is a quite iconic building. And they wanted to know if I could rebuild that for them in miniature scale that they could use to play on their D&D table with. So I'm trying to match the look and feel of it as best I can, but also make it playable, which, I mean, if I was to make it to true scale, this thing would be the size of a room compared for like D&D characters. Like it's crazy. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to blend it. That's a really fun, difficult project. There's so much detail in it, but I'm absolutely loving doing that. Another client wants a bridge, and they want it to be playable and engage and be able to engage. So we've got a main bridge going, and then I've just finished making the portcullis for it with a little crank on the side to wind up the little gate in and out of it. And I love putting actual working mechanisms and things. That's really fun. There's going to be a little kind of bridge tower that will go on it next. And I have coming up this month, the client wants me to build a really cool room. They got screen caps from a module, and it's – I can't remember the name of it. It's one of the Strahd campaigns. I don't remember which one it's called, but it's the final battle room, and there's a statue in the room or whatever. We're making that for the client for their campaign that they're running. And the other one, and this is a crazy one, a client bought a book nook for me from Etsy, and in some communication with them, I said, you know, if you ever want anything else, let me know. I also do custom builds. And they're like, oh, what kind of stuff? I said, mostly fantasy is what I work in, but you name it, any genre. And they said, what about Star Trek? I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And they're a huge Star Trek fan. Like they've got over 50 props from the original Star Trek series that they've accumulated, like original ones from the show. Yeah, they're crazy. And they're really, really into it, which is cool. And they're getting me to build them the Star Trek set. So what they actually filmed the TV show on in miniature scales at 1/32nd scale. So kind of like a matchbox car size, with, I think at current, we have 100 lights are going to be going into it. Little LED lights that light up all the rooms and all this kind of stuff. It's crazy. It's a huge build that's coming up later this month. So yeah, I am just 100% super blessed. Amazing people out there and who have passions. And that kind of ties into what we've been talking about. Just someone excited and passionate about something. I've got their passions coming to me and asking me to bring it to life for them, which is super cool. So yeah. That's part of the crazy summer. Anyways, I'm rambling on. I should let you chat for a little bit, Jim.
I was just going to say, like, and Sean's not kidding when he says he can build anything. Like, when I, like, the inn that you built me, the first thing I got commissioned from you, I mean, you know, it's an inn. That's, other people have built inns before, but then I asked him to do the inn of the last home. It's a giant treehouse. That's also a tavern. Quite a bit trickier. Same, no problem. Built that. And then I asked him to build me foam armor. And he did, first time ever, just to whip that up. I get, lots of compliments on that one. So,
oh, thanks, buddy. I
keep killing it, man.
Well, thank you. I'm not a youngster. I am an old man. And I've got a lot of years in different fields of experience that I've worked in over the years, from leatherworking, silversmithing. I did paper making for a long time. Just a bunch of different areas, right? And I found all of those things over the years have added up to what I'm doing right now. I can turn around and look back at all this stuff and realize that for what I'm doing right now, all of those different fields have really helped in skills, in collections of tools. I have lots of different tools and stuff from all those different areas. And I use a lot of them in the work that I do. And I've just found that for me right now, working in foam, which sounds crazy, is the medium that I just feel really passionate and I've really found a home in. Like, I just am loving what I'm doing. So I feel very, very fortunate I get to do it. And I loved building your stuff. That was a lot of fun. The armor was crazy. That was a real challenge.
Well, man, it shows in your work, like, obviously, that you love it and it's very good at it.
I appreciate that. It's been a crazy summer. Everybody has just got lots and lots going on.
Yeah. I was going to say, way to be relevant in video games right now, Sean. The new World of Warcraft expansion just came out, so you kind of dropping that with your build. I mean, that's
someone
that doesn't play video games, man. That's pretty impressive. So might have to put that in is there hashtags and podcasts to, for searches?
Totally. Actually, we
talked about WoW a little bit, so you can throw that in there.
Funny enough, we do add hashtags to our podcast. I'll have to make sure I add that to it. There you go. Thanks, buddy.
I actually just got back into Minecraft a couple of days ago. That's another one. It's like a game of imagination and building and stuff. And I've never done World of Warcraft for the same reason. Mm-hmm. I don't want to fall down that rabbit hole, but Minecraft's usually my rabbit hole. And I usually get back into it around the fall when the summer starts come and do an end or whatever, but I'll play it. I'll probably junk it for a month and then I'll, put it away for another year. But
yeah, you're right. I mean, it was weird because it's been stupid hot here too. Like Alberta, almost the whole world. I think it was on record that this summer was the hottest summer worldwide on record. But just going outside now, I can feel it today. It was turning. It's supposed to be warm today, but there's a bit of a breeze out there. You can feel it's not quite as warm. And we drop like 10 degrees, I think, tomorrow. So it could be the last hot day of the really hot day of the year. It's interesting, but it turns here pretty quick. Like it won't be long before we'll have, wind and snow blowing. Enjoy it while you can, I guess, even if it is really hot. But it's been a good summer. There's been a lot going on. I feel really, really, really excited about what's happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really excited all this. It sucks that I haven't been at the hobby table since right before ArtCon. That was the last time I've done any hobby stuff.
Yeah.
But like, I'm not sad about it at all. I think it's good. And then I come back into it fresh and
I mean,
I feel when I do something for like, same as disc golf, like I play a lot of disc golf, usually about 5 times a week, all like spring, summer, fall, and then winter time. I don't play it at all. And like we can like our course, but it's just like, it's good to just take a break.
Yeah.
And then I actually want to play it when I get back to it, 'cause I miss it.
Yeah. That's smart. That makes sense.
And same thing with the hobby, right? I get tired of painting minis when I do it all the time. But if you don't paint a mini for 8 months, you're like, oh, man, I could really go for that.
I think part of the problem, too, Jim, is you just don't have enough minis on hand that you need to paint. Like, it's not like you have a collection of them or anything that, aren't painted.
Yeah.
You need to buy some more minis.
I only have like 1,000 unpainted minis to choose from. So And you would be surprised how many times, so me and the wife, some of our date nights, we'll do like a mini painting night.
That's awesome.
And sometimes, man, I like can't find a mini that I want to paint. And like, I think I have probably about 1,000 unpainted minis. And sometimes I'm just like, I don't know. That one's not really, not feeling that one, not feeling
that's
that
so
one.
That's so funny. Yeah, it's always the thing you don't have. It's the shiny, exciting item.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
That was another summer thing that I've been doing. I for a number of years now, I've been going into used bookstores and I've been trying to collect kind of old fantasy novels, especially the Conan Frazetta ones have been the big ones I wanted to collect. Yeah. I've always wanted to have the collection of those original paperbacks, and everything has become so collectible in our world now. Like, it used to be a time when you could go into like a secondhand store or go to like, you know, like a thrift store or like a market or something, and you could find really cool things and for cheap. But now I think the advent of the digital world, like, you know, eBay blew that open where people could be like, shit, I got an old book sitting on a shelf I can sell for like $40. Oh my God. And I think it just kind of exposed collector, what used to be in small holes and places, you know, that you would find a collector. Now it's just worldwide and it's, everything is worth something now. So it's become extremely hard to find those books. Like, I even remember we used to go to Value Village and look through the books there, look through like tons of stuff. And you used to be able to find like old, like computer stuff. Like, I'm a fool. I like collect old computers from the 70s and 80s. And you used to find stuff like that for like $5. Well, now you can't find that stuff because there's people at Value Village where their job is to weed through and they pull out the stuff that potentially has value. Mm-hmm. And then they sell it off at a different place to someone who will then sell it off to other people at a higher price. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's figured out the deal. So I kind of gave up trying to find them in the stores because I just were not finding them anymore. And so I went on a tour of the interwebs, and slowly over, you know, this last year, I've been finding where I can. And these are books from the late 60s, early 70s. Paperback, but you know, I'm trying to find them for not too expensive. So I've just the other day I got the last one. So I've got the full collection of I believe it's, I want to say eight books. There's more to the series, the Conan series, but eight of them were Frazetta covers.
Oh, and I've kinda sick.
Got, yeah. So I've got first issue.
Oh yeah, buddy.
Holding him up in front of Jim here.
Beauty.
First edition. Books from the late 60s, and it's taken a while to collect them. I want to redo the D&D room here. Jim and I were laughing about that. I've had to donate tables to Ardcon, and I haven't set them back up, so my room's a disaster. We've not played a game down here in 4 years. We do a physical game. We've been playing digital forever, so it's just a mess. I want to clean it all out and do it, but I want behind me make little shelves and put a bunch of my old manuals and then maybe like the Frazetta books all up on there behind me on little shelves.
Oh, yeah.
So that's on the list of stuff to do, but we'll get there. But anyways, that was something else this summer that I just kind of decided to tuck in and really spend some time looking, and was quite happy to find the collection piece by piece over time, and you know, and pick them up. It was fun.
Oh, that's awesome. I know, like Old Crow too, like with the old modules, and like me too. And like, I collect old like fantasy novels too, and I don't read novels. Like, I do strictly audiobooks now. So like, it's insane that I'm paying money for books that I will never read.
There's something about having them, you know, and the thing is that at some point in time with some of the stuff that they are potentially investments. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could, like, I know if I needed to, I could put those books up on the, like the places where I bought them from and sell them for this, at least the same amount of money I bought them for, if not more money down the line, because they're only going to grow in value. So it, you know, it is a bit of a kind of a, it can be thought of as a bit of an investment if that's, you know, if it makes it easier, but it's just fun to have.
How I justify it is if someday we might just get like a wicked solar flare from the sun, he'll knock out all the electricity and everything.
Yep.
So,
there you go.
Nothing will be digital anymore. And then I will have a
books to
wealth
read.
Of books. Yeah.
Well, so, I've always said
to sell.
Yeah. I've never been a smoker. I've not smoked in my life. I rarely drink. I mean, when I was young, I used to drink alcohol because I was young and foolish, but I haven't drank anything in years. I just don't drink. Those are two expensive hobbies. Mm-hmm. If you want to call them a hobby, like, that's expensive to do that. So there you go. I saved a lot of money and I've spent it in a different area.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Everyone has their vice. It's
right. Right. You have fun. To.
Yeah. If you're not hurting anyone else, you Don't shame.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah. I want to give you a little sneak peek in my game here, Sean.
Please.
So you collect travelers and treasures. So if you got a D20 near you, we'll just do a, we'll get you a traveler and a treasure.
All right. Rolling. 4. I rolled a 44 earlier and I rolled a 4. I'm all about fours.
Okay. A baker from a neighboring kingdom comes to trade recipes. What delicious delicacy do they introduce to the kingdom and what recipe secret do you give them?
Oh, that's cool. That is cool. Okay. He's a baker. I ask him if he knows anything about pastry involving fish, because I've seen and heard of people making really cool pastry with fish inside. So a savory bakery thing.
Oh yeah.
And, I teach him how to make a shepherd's pie, but with like a really cool puff pastry on top.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. So then, yeah. And then that you would add that to your kingdom that you got fish pastries now, right?
Cool.
Just a silly thing. And then another D20 and we'll do the treasure.
18.
A bag of rare alchemy ingredients.
Oh, cool. So,
yeah. It's just, there's a lot of roll charts on here. However, Mike was trying to, we were playing and we kept rolling the same numbers.
Oh, weird.
So we had like a bunch of witches wandering around our town square because everyone just kept rolling witch travelers.
Oh, hilarious.
And then you have to roll to see if they're real witches or false witches, like
okay. Just
crazy people that think they're witches. And we kept rolling false too. So it's just a bunch of crazy people out in our town square. And then Mike wanted me, instead of a D20 or 20 roll chart or whatever for the travelers, he said I should make it a D100 for that, make 100 of them, but I'm just gonna leave it at 20.
That's awesome. Yeah. Dude.
And then you roll for race and stuff, so then you know it's nice too because it switches.
Jim, I'm sorry, we don't say race anymore. I believe we say species now.
Oh right, fantasy species. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh.
The fancy races on here.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. So yeah. Cool, man.
Dude, that is sick. That is so sick.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. It's a lot of fun, a lot of roll charts, a lot of just like imagination stuff, and you're just riffing off ideas. And it can be solo play or two player, or if we did five player and it worked good. So I just gotta figure out how many cards you draw for depending on the amount of players. Kind of keep it going because you don't want the game to be, you know, 2.5 hours or whatever. That's bit of a slog, but
totally.
Yeah, just tweaking a couple things and I should have the playtest out for you and some other, you know, some Pink Foam Brigade members and whoever that's else wants awesome. It. So,
dude, I know there'll be a number of people who will love to jump in and try it out. That's so cool. Yeah. Oh, thanks, and man. then hopefully in the non too distant future, it'll be a released product.
Yeah. Hopefully ArtCon next year, we'll both have physical copies.
Isn't that fun? That's so fun. I love it. And like I said, it's a feeling of contributing. You know what I mean? Like to this thing that we've done and played and enjoyed for so long, it's kind of fun to think of actually, you know, putting something out there yourself. I think that's really a neat feeling.
Yeah. I'm going to struggle with the art part on mine, but that's all right.
I'm sure we know a few people that can help out if you need it, man.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He already has just that little logo I did.
Cool. Well, you know, I'm getting close. Like that has been a really, you know, interesting thing. Like, because you do something like this, you do need to have artwork. There has to be a certain amount of artwork in it, mm-hmm. and because it can just be all words, but it's nice to flavor it up with pictures.
Oh yeah,
and that was the thing. And I mean, our good friend Mike is so talented, but Mike's a busy dude and he's got a lot going on. And that's how it started. I'm like, hey, could you do some of this stuff? He said, sure, I can. And it was just like, it would take a really long time, obviously, because he's busy. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to have to dive in and do some of this myself. And I'm not great at creating from scratch. I need something to work from type of thing. So it's been a bit of a challenge doing some of that. But I tell you, I've really, really enjoyed all of the drawings. So it's like every day I'd wake up and spend a couple of hours doing some more drawing. And that's been going on for a couple of months now. And it's kind of fun to get back into drawing that much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not getting on a bashing section here, but at the same time of doing this, this is when everything's being released now from the new Player's Handbook. And, you know, I find it so hard because I look at their stuff and we were talking about this earlier and it's like, everything is just, it is warm. The colors of everything are soft and warm, and it's friendly. And it's just such a departure from flat, such a departure from the D&D world that we know. And I'm drawing these crazy black and white, you know, screaming goblins that are just like going crazy, and it's all they're drooling, and it's just, and it's so different. And it's not bad. I mean, you know, I mean, it's not good. It's not bad. It just is what they're doing. And it's just, it feels kind of like they're leaving their existing fan base and trying to get a different one. That's what it feels like to me. And hey, that's what they want to do. That's what they're going to do. It's fine. The beauty of the game is that you can be at any point in it. You can remain back in, you know, AD&D if you want. You can be wherever you want. You can stay at 5 and just keep your world going and don't worry about it. But it's just, it really, really shone a light on it for me, where I'm trying to draw in a style and I'm seeing the stuff they're coming out with, which is completely not at all what I'm doing.
Yeah, I swear on our crystal ball that Sean's art for this book, I've seen a bunch of it, is better than any 5e art that's come out. And obviously the new handbook too, but that's, you know,
yeah,
you don't have to shoot very far to get, I can draw better than the new art that's been coming up for the new book, but all recent modern fantasy art, man, it's just
super,
you blew that out of the water. So
thanks, man.
Killing it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It, you know, I don't know. I get it. Everybody needs to make money, and I think that's the root of a lot of what their decisions are. They're trying to make money. You create a manual that you publish and you put it out there, and a number of people buy it, and then, you know, a few people buy it after that, but not that much. There's no revenue stream, and they've decided they need to come up with something that gets a revenue stream. Hey, you do what you got to do, but I feel it's at the expense of a lot of their existing fan base, which is kind of sad. And whatever, it is what it is. But and I think maybe that's why you're seeing stuff like what we're doing, why there's so many people, and we've talked about this before, so many companies out there coming up with their own game system. I think maybe that's what they're doing too. They're just they're in a funny way almost like removing themselves from the monopoly of role-playing games and allowing the space to open up for other people to be doing stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, well, awesome. Is what it is.
Oh, I did want to touch on another thing.
Yeah.
So this year I'm not going to do Epic Inktober.
Right.
Just been like super busy working on the game. I've been like crushing some fitness goals actually, which takes up a lot of time, which is super important to me. And my mental health hasn't felt this good in a very long time, and my body feels awesome. So I definitely don't want to be messing around with that. And just, yeah, Epic Inktober takes like a lot of time out of my day, right, for that. So I just don't have it, but that's cool. I just wanted to say, like, what we're talking about, like with projects and stuff, like don't feel guilty about not doing stuff either, right? Like if you want to work on something, do it. If you don't, you don't have to. And just make sure you take priorities. Like your health obviously is a big one, or mental and physical. Like those should, you know, take place over everything else. So
yeah, I'm super proud of you, buddy, because being a person that's done things, and I'm very patterned, so I'll do things and I'll do it the same way, the same thing over and over and over, and then you wind up it turns out that it owns you, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I have to be really careful with ArtCon, that I don't feel that ArtCon owns me. Like I have to do ArtCon. I need to be very careful about that. So I'm really proud that you said, hey, as much as I love doing Epic Inktober, I just don't have the available time or resources this year to do it the way I want to do it. I've got other irons in the fire that I want to go and do. So instead of just half-assing it, you just said, I'm not going to do it. And that's really cool. That's really brave. And I think anybody who did it for the last 2 years would totally understand why. You know what I mean? And it doesn't mean you won't do it next year. It's just this year, this is the situation. And so super proud of you for doing that. I think it's really a smart call. And it's a hard thing to do, to recognize that and to action on it. It's not easy. So good on you, buddy.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, just the love and attention that it deserves and the artists deserve. Because like last couple of years, man, I've had insanely talented artists, you included in it, where I'm just blown away every day. And it's like, I don't want to just be given half-assed comments or not paying enough attention. Like I like to give that my all because it deserves it. It's a really cool, special thing to me. So.
Yeah. And you do a great job because you do, you know, restory everybody's thing and go through and comment. And it's a ton of work, just that in itself. Yeah. It's huge. So I think that's smart, recognizing that it's just not the right time this year. That's really smart.
Yeah, I might do just someone else's Inktober, just as this little side thing. Don't even know if I'll post it or not. I might throw it up in my stories or whatever, but I do like the challenge of drawing every day too. Like, it's fun, but, and then like with Epic Inktober, I feel like that I really have to bring my A game because I'm the one hosting it.
Yep.
So then it takes a lot more time too, right? If it's someone else's and I'm just doing it for myself, I can just do whatever. And if I, you know, only get 10 minutes to work on it, that's fine. And you know,
I feel like I've just done two or three Inktobers in a row. Doing all the graphics kidding, for my book. I am not doing an Inktober. I was actually a little relieved when you said that.
I was just going to say, actually, Sean bribed me not to do Epic Inktober this year. He didn't want to feel pressured to do it. So, kidding, man. All the drawing you've been doing. So, and then like Mike too, right? Like he might be like pretty drawn out too.
Totally. I mean, it was great. I've absolutely loved it, but it has been an insane amount of work. And that's okay. That's been great. But the idea of doing an Inktober right now is a little bit daunting. So kind of glad.
Really wanted to just like push that it's don't guilt yourself into, you know, whatever you need to do at that time. Yeah, we do. Right.
We have a tendency to do that, feeling that I have to do this because of such and such a reason. You don't have to. You don't have to do anything. As long as you're not hurting yourself or anybody, you don't have to do anything. Yeah. So, be willing to make that call. Yeah. You know, and that's like a game. If you've got if you're DMing a game and it's coming up and you're just not feeling the level of preparedness or you're just not feeling it, you're totally valid in saying to the group, you know, guys, can we push it a week or can we skip this month or whatever? Like, you're totally allowed to do that because, you know, that's sometimes what you have to do.
And most of the time, like 99% of the time, people understand if they're, you know, because they're adults too and they realize that everyone has stuff going on, right?
Yeah. And if they don't, just kill them next game. No big deal.
Yeah. You're like, fine. Campaign's over.
TPK.
Yeah. Awesome.
Cool, buddy. This has been a really fun time chatting. I know it's been a long time coming. I apologize to all of our lovely listeners. We've just been, as you heard, very, very busy this summer. So we'll try and get a little bit more back on schedule.
I can't believe, because when was the last one?
Well, at your place. Yeah, June.
Is that when it got released in June?
No, I think we released it late June, early July.
Yeah, so I can't believe me and you haven't talked since early July.
Crazy.
No, me and Sean talk every day.
I don't talk to you ever. Outside the podcast. It's been a blessing. He's been off the radar. It's been so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we haven't officially sat down and done one of these for a long time, but and that's okay. That is just what we talked about. That is just what we talked about, right? Like, we didn't say to each other, we don't have time to do this. We just both knew we were busy and us hounded the other and said, we should be doing this. And I'm sorry for listeners that didn't hear anything out of it. I apologize for that. And sometimes we do apologize because I love doing this. I love chatting with you. I love the interactions with people, hearing from, you know, what they got out of the show. Those are all great things, but there just really wasn't bandwidth to do it and to do it properly. Mm-hmm. And so until now, and we said, let's chat about it. And we booked some time in our schedules and that's what we're doing. So, you know, we'll try and get back on a bit of a regular schedule, but maybe we won't. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's our thing. Nothing's beholding us to doing that. And so we'll do the best we can.
Yeah. Until someone, I'm sure some of our fans eventually are going to start up like a Patreon or a crowd thing or whatever. And raise a whole bunch of money for us to like keep pumping these out every month for like big amounts of cash. So
if they want to pay us, we'll do it. We'll literally do it weekly.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, sure. But right now it's just for fun. So for fun doesn't pay the bills.
Yeah. Oh, we have to have at least one billionaire fan. That's
come on. Right.
Yeah. Come on. Come on, Bill Gates or Elon Musk.
No,
I'm guessing Elon Musk would be more of a fan than Bill Gates.
I don't want to get paid by Elon Musk for doing a podcast. I'm sorry. Pass.
Yeah. I don't want to get paid by any billionaires. I don't want nothing to do with any of them.
There you go.
Yeah. Multi-millionaires. That'll do.
I think we're looking for the Gygax Foundation.
Mm.
You know, like maybe Luke. Maybe Luke wants to pay for us. Luke's got to be rich.
Oh, poor guy. Sure.
He probably is not rich at all.
No. No. No, I think Gary got pretty screwed over there in a lot of lawsuits. Yeah.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about Mr. Manganiello?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, maybe Joe would be willing.
He just had a divorce, so I don't know how much money he has now either.
That's true, too. That's true, too. Yeah, that's true.
I'm telling you, man, more money, more problems.
More money, you know, more money.
I think sticking to us just doing this for free for ourselves is the best option.
It totally is. It's the best option. And we're not beholden to anybody. We can say what we want, when we want, how often we want. That's how it rolls.
Except for Chris. He's got a little bit of pull.
He does. But he's not been bugging us either. So, you know, he's busy as well.
Oh, yeah. Hey, why hasn't he been on us for that?
Right?
Yeah, I've talked to him about that.
All right, buddy. This has been phenomenal. Thanks so much for taking time today. Yeah. And I think we'll probably wrap it up there. And hopefully we'll have another one of these sooner than later.
Yeah. Sounds good. It's been a blast, everybody. And if you have any comments or questions or insults, or you just want to yell at us for not putting out enough podcasts, it's crystalball at 13side.com.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Well done, you. You've made it to the end of the podcast. You are a bold adventure, to be sure.
Remember to fill your wire skin and to have your blade sharpened at the blacksmith's before departing.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast to be notified of new 13-sided die adventures. And don't forget to tell your friends about the silly fools talking about D&D.
13-sided die has been brought to you by Sean and Jim.
Executive produced by Sean and Jim.
Mini painting by Sean and Jim.
Engineered by Sean and Jim.
Goblin torture device by Sean and Jim.
Conceptualized by Sean and Jim. Please note, no goblins were harmed in the making of this podcast.